Summer is definitely the sexiest season. I mean, think about it. The days are longer, the nights are hotter, and your sex life is too. And if you're looking to turn up the heat, how about a little help from our friends at Promescent? Summer is all about things hot and steamy, so I highly recommend you add something extra and tap into Promescent's lineup of pleasure-enhancing products. I've been singing their praises for years, since they started, and for good reason. Because first up, we have the legendary Delay Spray. This is the MVP of lasting longer and keeping those eager penile nerves in check. You just do a quick spray, and you're set to outlast even the longest days of summer, ensuring the party doesn't end before you want it to. So you can have the mind-blowing climax you're now so very well equipped to reach, thanks to Promescent. It just helps you last longer without all the worry. And for women, Promescent's warming arousal gel is a fun pre-sex ritual. You just rub it into your vulva a few minutes before and you'll feel it start to tingle, warming up every nerve ending. So you'll feel that much more pleasure everywhere before you even get going. So it's kind of like the sure thing. So make sure this summer is the sexiest one yet. Check out promescent.com/Emily and get 15% off at checkout. You get free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee, discreet shipping, all the things. Promescent is your ticket to a more guaranteed good time. That's promescent.com/Emily. promescent.com/Emily for your exclusive discount. Check it out. Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. Do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a Magic Wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the Magic Wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades, and I've been obsessed with my Magic Wand. I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the Magic Wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the Magic Wand Rechargeable, tiny with the Magic Wand Mini or Micro. Micro is really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm talking about women's orgasms and the masturbation habits of Americans. Plus, I'm taking your sex and relationship calls. Topics include all the latest research about women's orgasms and how we feel about it, how often Americans are masturbating, what they're thinking about, and so much more. Is sex addiction real, and is it over or underdiagnosed? And you're trying to conceive, but how do you keep things sexy? All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. Find us on all social media. It is Sex with Emily across the board. Also, intentions. I invite you to set an intention for the show with me, as we do at the start of every show. What I mean is, when you're listening, think about like what you want to get out of listening to this episode. How could it help you? And it could be like, oh, wow, I want to see if my masturbation habits are like everybody else. Or, hey, if you talk about science and sex, I'm in. My intention for the show is to give you more knowledge, more insights around orgasms, pleasure, masturbation, so you can find some peace of mind in your own practices. All right, guys, enjoy the show. Okay, here's something. This is a year in review, the latest sex research on women's orgasms. Turns out that body movement appears to be associated with orgasm during vaginal intercourse. Now, I don't know why they need to, I believe that you need to move your body to have an orgasm. I wonder if they meant like you're thrusting more back and forth. You're moving, you're tilting your pelvic floor, like you're tilting, moving back and forth. Mm.
I think maybe, but also I think like if they're thinking like internally, there's like a specific type of like an internal orgasm. There's like a specific type of movement that seems to...
I think it's like gyrations, doing your like Kegel. Like
it says specifically, the authors investigated women's reports of back and forth swinging movements of the pelvis and
this
trunk.
Is what I'm saying this movement.
Oh, okay. Sorry, it's like the computer's in the way, so I can't see. Okay. I just see. All right, hold on. Wait. I'm bringing the mic. All right. So for those of you at home,
it's
Emily,
like tilting. I said yes. Like, I said it's the, that movement the because
butt,
then your pelvic floor. Don't you do that
the
when you're having
comes
sex?
Up. I
do
mean.
You do that? I think I
yeah, I do that, but I guess I'm not, I wasn't conscious of like necessarily
gyrations.
Like to me, gyrations more vibration, like gyration, like fast and crazy. Whereas like that to me is more of like a swing.
Oh, interesting.
It's more of like, you know, my butt swinging back and forth. Uh-huh. My pelvis is like,
right. Cool. Is, what does it say though? The
that's
whole
what it
thing?
Says.
Okay, it's right. Got it. So that's what it is. So move it.
And then, and presence of more direct or precise rubbing of the clitoris.
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, this is kind of funny because basically it's like, don't stay still.
Yeah, don't stay still.
If
it
you
feels
want
good,
orgasm.
Move. And rub the goddamn clitoris, please. Please. Okay, pursuing an orgasm. Okay, this is great. This is the research on women's orgasms. Pursuing an orgasm increases a woman's chances of having an orgasm.
Yeah, so it's saying here that putting too much pressure might make orgasm happen less, hence O-blocking. But that tends, as new research suggests, that tends to use that and they devalue their sexual pleasure. So I think what it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, do you think people when we say don't focus on orgasm, they mean like it gives like everyone the go ahead to like, no, like you don't have to worry about trying to even get there. It's more,
I think maybe they do take it that way. But what I mean is focus on what's happening in the moment.
Yeah.
Focus on the pleasure that you're having, let go, and then the orgasm will happen.
Yeah, I think people are just getting confused.
They probably are. Maybe, I mean, well, but what we saw is, what was it, 81% of women don't feel comfortable asking for an orgasm. So it's like, they probably are taking it as, oh, thank God I don't have to worry about ever orgasming again. At least I can cuddle. I don't know what they think.
That's the PSA
you
right now.
You deserve orgasms. We all deserve them. Okay, the next one is, faking an orgasm isn't necessarily bad. It just depends on why women are faking. Now, I think it's always pretty bad. Not bad. We've all done it. But usually we're doing it because we don't want our partner to feel bad. And we just want it to be over with. I think those are the reasons. So what's the other?
Oh, okay. Okay. I actually like it. So it's
all
more
right,
of the,
right,
it's the,
right.
It's the fake it till you make it situation. So sometimes the act of beginning to fake an orgasm can actually elevate your own sexual arousal.
Yes, that is true. Okay. I believe that. I believe that sometimes that can happen. It's a slippery slope, though. I think it is true that if you're familiar with your orgasms and how it happens, I think if you start to act as if, meaning, let's say you know when you orgasm, you are moving your body, you're breathing in a certain way. Sometimes when you start to do that, it can happen anyway. But I don't think you don't want to go full fourths and just fake it. Like
yeah.
Maybe you're like, oh, false alarm.
Well, basically, and what it's saying here, it's like, if you're faking your orgasm for your partner because you're like, I'm not getting
right.
there, or it's going to make them insecure, then it's not good. But
no
if
good.
You're faking it because it's kind of like, I'm doing it because then it'll actually help me get there better, then it's fine.
Yeah, that we are in support of you faking it if it means that you're going to get there, for sure. You know, if there's news stories and one of them has a study about masturbation that I have not heard yet and that I think will be fascinating, and it's masturbation. I want to talk about it. How often do Americans masturbate?
Oh.
What do you guys think? Men, women, on average, per month.
Oh, per month.
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh.
Men, per month.
Men? Okay. Men, I would say...
one with 15.
Based on my man, though, it's like twice a day. He does. He does.
I think
it twice
that's a lot.
Day.
Who has time for that?
So 60.
He does it in the morning and he does
okay,
it
your
before
guess
bed.
Is 60.
Yeah. So 60.
Well, no, because she said it's twice a day.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I do math, which is rare that I do math and my show.
I'm doing 15 times a month.
Okay, women.
Okay, women. Okay, that I think is going to be way less. I really do.
It is 50. It is 14 for men.
Oh,
nice.
Good job.
Thank you. For women, I'm going to go with like
I'm going to say five.
Okay, seven.
Yeah.
7.8.
Nice.
Okay, but
I mean,
some
sad.
Of these...
Sad, yeah.
Nice.
Okay, fun enough.
Okay, so let's move on to the interesting parts that I thought were very interesting. Who do you think Americans fantasize about while masturbating besides their partner? Celebrities, 34%.
Wow.
I wouldn't have thought it was celebrities was top, but that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Ex-romantic partners.
Oh.
That makes
well,
sense.
Well, you guys
33%.
Already
just
sleeping
below
with
celebrities.
Them.
Ex, though. You slept with them. You're with your current partner, who you love, and sex is great. But that's the only person you've been having sex with for the last year or two. So then you're like, huh, what's another sexual experience? And then you go, and you flip back because you're like, I can't masturbate. I love my partner. And then you go back to that memory and then you jack off. That's easy and easily accessible, just like a celebrity's face, perhaps. Friends, 33%. Mm-hmm. These are common to the top, you know.
Wow. Like, well, like friends. A guy friend.
No.
Some guy friends are hot.
That's weird to me.
I mean,
really?
I've never thought about a guy friend, though.
No.
Porn stars, 28%.
Mm, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Only their romantic partner, 25%. This is what they masturbate. Selects what they masturbate besides their partner. Okay, this is interesting. Ready, guys? Coworkers. 18% of people masturbate thinking about their coworkers. So then I was like walking to the studio today down the hall thinking, who's like 18%? Who's masturbating about each other in here? Is that happening?
Oh, my That's God.
Hilarious. I mean, not with me, but hopefully some of those other serious men.
I'm sure.
And
I wanted to ask. No, just kidding. Co-workers.
I know some that think you're very attractive, Emily. That's all I can say. Workplace.
Are you allowed to date people who work here? Is it in the contract?
I don't know. I don't know I know people have dated here. Like, I know that has been a thing, but not like here in LA. I mean, I've known people in like New York that have done that people told me about anyway.
In New York. Okay. So I thought this was really interesting too, you guys. We're talking about, we got some sex in the news here. Americans' perceptions of masturbation while growing up. 31% say it was shameful. 31%. And I'm going to say that many of them probably still feel that way. 31%, it was healthy and natural, 28% neutral to it, and 22% said it was bad or sinful, something that only adults do, was 17%. Okay, it was gross. Okay, so this isn't good. So 80% of what we thought about as children was negative when it came to masturbation.
Wow.
Yeah. Was negative, that it was wrong, shameful, gross, for adults only, didn't know what it was. So literally, okay, 90%, no one knew what the fuck they were doing or what it was and felt bad. I don't know if I believe this. How Americans feel after masturbating, I will believe. 34% relaxed, ready to sleep. Mm-hmm. 24% great mood, better mood. Only 7% still feel guilty or ashamed. So I'm happy to see that's changed, but I feel like it's higher than that. I feel like there's a lot of people who, after they masturbate, they feel bad about it.
Yeah.
They feel shame. But I mean, I'm glad it's low. Some people can get rid of that. But then some people still feel they felt shame about masturbation. They might feel okay about masturbation, but they might have carried that shame into the bedroom. Like, sex and shame should not be related. You should not have shame when it comes to sex.
Right.
Yeah. Period in a story. No matter what.
I think I had shame about masturbating until I started masturbating. And then I was like, this isn't shameful. Are you guys kidding?
Right.
But I was always told not to, so I didn't.
Even though you're like, this is good, but I'm a good girl, so I won't do it. But they're wrong.
Catholic. I didn't know.
Yeah. They do tell you, like, when you're... Because I grew up Catholic, too, and it was very shameful to be, like, doing any of that kind of stuff.
You have to confess it to the priest,
and
or
like,
you
I don't
can't get Holy Communion.
That. Right. It's like, I want my little chip. The bread.
So you're like, I'm not, I can't master it because then I can't get the bread because I can't lie.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So at what point in your life do you go, oh, I guess it's not shameful? Many people never do that.
Well, I stopped getting the bread a long time ago, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But I'm still masturbating and occasionally going to church.
Yeah.
But you don't feel bad about it.
I don't feel
like
bad
I'll take
at
the
all.
Bread and I'm not talking to you. I'm not making a stop. I'm not making an appointment.
I just don't get the
make
bread.
An appointment.
Because then I don't
confession
feel bad.
I didn't want to do 10 Hail Marys and 10 Our Fathers. I was like,
can't you just text it? You can't like text him and be like,
no.
Here's what I did. But then you could say, it'd probably be easier to be shameful and admit it to your priest.
One year.
Like, I'll do the Hail Marys at home.
One year he was
apps
like,
for everything. Confess to an app.
Yes. That'd be awesome. But one year he was just like, I need help decorating the church if you want that to be your punishment.
What?
And I was like,
wait,
yes.
Did you tell him? Did you tell him that you masturbated?
I told him everything.
You really did?
Yeah, I really did.
Wow. I've never done
you
that.
You said I masturbate and he made you put up the lights for the Christmas show?
Yeah. Masturbate, sex before marriage.
Oh, wow.
No wonder I took so long to get those bathroom lights in my house.
I had shameful memories around it.
She wouldn't do it. It took forever.
Here's the thing. We tried it, some different options coming. I finally did the research, found the right lights.
She's like, what did I do wrong that I have to hang up these lights in her bathroom?
It's funny. That's probably true. Who knows what's going on?
This is the problem, you guys. This is the challenge, is that a lot of these things happen in our childhood and they get weaved into our adult life. And I'm not saying you were triggered by those lights, but there's good examples for everybody in our lives. We don't remember where it comes from. And then that's why therapy's good too, or coaching or journaling. You'll figure it all out. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into your calls. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. So we can talk to Jake. He's 42 in California. Hey, Jake, thanks for calling. How can I help?
Hey, Emily, how you doing?
Great.
Good. Hey, quick question for you. What is your view on sex addicts? Is that something that's legitimate? Is that a true diagnosis, or is that just kind of make-believe fairy tale stuff?
Well, I think that for many, it is a diagnosis, and it can help them realize that sex has become a problem in their life. So I think that it has been given out inappropriately in times. People have been mislabeled as a sex addict when they're not. But I think that for many people who have been, and they've been able to get help through like Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, they've been able to look at their porn watching and find that, oh, maybe I do have a problem with porn or with having sex with people that aren't serving me and all that stuff. So why do you ask, Jake?
Would you say that because you feel that people are labeled as a sex addict if they're starting to have relationship problems as far as it's taking place, as far as having real relationships with people, and it's almost overwhelming them on a day-to-day activity?
Well, I think that people, why do I think that people call people sex addicts? Is it because they're having a lot of sex? I think people do it because they don't understand sex. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess to that point, I think some people maybe are labeled as a sex addict because they think it's affecting their personal life. Or is it to where people are labeled sex addicts just because they enjoy having sex and they think about it all the time? I don't know if there's a line.
I think people are mislabeled as sex addicts a lot because we don't understand sex. So we think, oh, if someone's open and talking about sex, they must be a sex addict. Because the way we're socialized and we're so backward, especially, you know, in our country about sex, it's like we're all thinking about sex. We all want to have sex. But the second someone's talking about it openly and publicly, well, they must be a sex addict. So that's where I think it's damaging when people are like, it's not real. Jamie was just called a sex addict last week. I don't think Jamie's a sex addict, but her friends think she's her best friends. We're like, we've discussed it and we think you're a sex addict because Jamie's all about sex, her job. She talks about it. She's got a room full of vibrators. I don't think Jamie's a sex addict, but I think that when there's consequences, with people who are sex addicts, when there's consequences in their relationship, you know, they're cheating and they can't help it, or they're watching a lot of porn and then they can no longer get turned on by humans, you know, that's by real people in front of them. So, yeah, Jake.
Okay, that's all I need to know. Thank you
awesome.
So much.
Thanks for calling, Jake. Appreciate it. It's true, people. There are some people who think it's not real. And this is what bothers me. When people want it, it's like, I'm gonna draw the tie between sex addiction and squirting right now. When people are like, is squirting real, Emily? Do you think that it's squirting? Is it pee? Is it not? I'm like, I don't fucking care. Traces of urine, yes, but it's squirting. And if you squirt and it feels good, put down a towel, like there's no problems, right? Mm-hmm. With sex addiction, same thing. It's like, yes, we can debate. I guess I'm talking about the debate aspect of it. Is it a sex addiction thing? Is it not? Should it not be an addiction? Is it mislabeled? I think we do mislabel sex addicts a lot. I think that like we don't understand sex as a society. So we're like, well, they're probably an addict. Or you hear about a celebrity who's cheating on their wife. And then they're like, oh, well, she went to sex rehab. You know, sometimes I think it's a little egregious.
Yeah.
But what I've seen is that there is an increase in people who are having problems around sex with porn. With, you know, sometimes they call it sex and love addiction, which is another 12 steps problem. People who are addicted to just loving and relationships. And so I think if that does resonate for you and you've been labeled as a sex addict and then you've actually gotten help and it's worked you, it's great. I don't care what you call it. So I think it's a debate that's just wastes our time a little bit. You know, I mean, I'm glad he asked that, though.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's like there is a huge debate in the sex world community, it's therapist community. Is it real? Is it not? And I just think.
I'm just going to cut this portion out and just send it to all my friends.
Please do. Jamie's not a sex addict.
I mean,
she's a sex enthusiast.
Thank you. I just felt like the word, I feel like addict is strong. I mean, but you can, I mean, wouldn't you say you could be technically addicted to kind of anything?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same thing, whether you're addicted to food or drugs or shopping or sex, it's a symptom of something deeper that we're typically numbing using one of these activities to numb our feelings and emotions around things. So if sex is your addiction, yeah. I mean, if it's something that's not, if there's consequences, your life is not able to function as normal, your penis isn't able to function, you can't, you know, whatever, that's because of your watching porn or cheating or obsession with sex, then it's a problem.
Do you think you've ever met someone you thought potentially could have been a sex addict?
Yes. In fact, this is a little known fact. I mean, I guess it's in Google, but I was introduced to it in depth, the concept of sex addiction. I was in a movie called I Am a Sex Addict. It came out in like 2002.
What?
It won a bunch of awards.
Hold on.
Director named Kaveh Zahedi, and a lot of people see this now, it's replaying on television all the time. And he asked me, he is a recovering sex addict, and he asked me to be in his film, and I'd never acted in my entire life, and I was a documentary filmmaker, and I was like, why would I want to be in this film? I read the script, and my boyfriend at the time was like, it could be just really cool to be in a movie. At first I thought it was kind of misogynistic just reading it, because I actually at the time was not doing this profession. I was making a film about politics at the time. But I thought that in reading the script and then after thinking, oh, I get it. I thought it was like misogynistic because I didn't understand about sex addiction. And,
okay.
And all I'm saying is that was my first introduction to some, knowing someone who'd been through sex addiction. So you can Google it.
You were Krista.
I was Krista. And yeah. It was on like a bunch of bus stops in New York for like months. It won awards. I think it's a good film. That was me at 30.
What was your, so you were Krista, but what does Krista do?
I am his girlfriend, and we meet in college. He goes through the movie. He has four girlfriends in the movie and tells his life story of being addicted to prostitutes. Mm-hmm. And when he tells me that he's having problems with prostitutes, I like freak out. We meet in film school. I don't understand it. I was like, it's like rape. These women have no choice. How dare you be with prostitutes? I was just very misunderstood. I was his girlfriend who didn't understand why he had to be with other women.
Mm.
So I was sort of. Yeah. And then the movie goes through a series of girlfriends. And then at the end, I don't want to spoil it for you. But in the end, he's, you know, figures it out.
I'm going to find this somewhere.
I can't believe how long my life has been.
I think I found your...
That we did
like a
talk
picture
about.
Of your back, but yeah. I think
that's definitely.
No, that's not me. That's the other girlfriend. Oh, no, that's a prostitute in the movie.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But I like that it's a compulsively true comedy.
Yeah, it's a comedy. No, it's a.
I'm watching this.
I know. I'm going to find it.
Screening.
Yeah. It's on Netflix.
Is it?
iTunes, Netflix. How have we not discussed this?
Yeah, this is.
It's called I'm a Sex Addict. It won awards, right? You see it. It won a bunch of awards.
Yeah.
You can watch the trailer, everyone. I made no money on it. They're not getting it. They're not getting paid for this ad. We had to reshoot it. It took like 3 years.
Wow.
It was a whole thing. Yeah.
Just watch
it. Just watch it.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Oh, and you're Krista with a CH. I don't know why I find that interesting. I just do.
Yeah. It was interesting. And at the time, it's funny. Like looking back at it, I didn't do. You'd see this. I wore no makeup. I was like, this is annoying. I'm trying to make a fit my own documentary. And I kept showing up. It took so much time. But looking back at it, I look at it, I'm like, oh God, I wish I wore makeup. And then number two, I just didn't know how to, you know, I'd never acted before.
We can rent it on Amazon or Apple at the moment.
Oh, I'm renting it on Amazon and I'm watching.
You get a kick out of it. I don't know how we never, 100%. See, every day we're learning.
I'm going to tell my mom I'm renting that on her Amazon.
Okay, perfect.
So if you see that, mom.
Right, exactly.
I think I'd love to know what you guys think of it. I literally haven't seen it in years.
I will take extensive notes.
Perfect. Watch Misadvised, too, on Bravo. That was
something. I have seen some clips
of that.
You did.
I watched it when it was actually on air, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I love, love, love it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very different. Okay, let's talk to Becky, 33, in Ohio. Hey, Becky, what's going on? How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know, my husband and I are trying to have a baby. I'm on Lexapro and he's not, but I'm the more sexual one. And so we've been together for 10 years. We're really struggling to have sex, to even just like get it on a little bit. And we need to make a baby essentially.
Right.
And we wanted to know, What should we do? I mean, I'm the one in the relationship who was way more sexual, and since I've been on the Lexapro, has just killed my
yes.
sex drive completely.
Well, okay, so Becky, this is such a good question, and it's good timing because we actually just had a podcast. There's a woman that I really respect and admire. Her name is Denise Wiesner, and she just wrote a book called Conceiving with Love, and it's all about like. And she was on my podcast, so if you search Sex with Emily, she talks about this is a huge problem with so many couples. They're like so focused on making the baby, then their sex life just evaporates. So I really think it's a matter of, first off, I would talk to your doctor about the Lexapro and see if they could kind of adjust the dosage because, you know, it's sometimes they can do that and they could add something else in or just, I don't know. I feel like you have no desire and can you have orgasms? Do you know?
I can. No, since I've been on the Lexapro, I can't. But okay. Before, I had no issue with it.
Well, that's why I just like, oh, like I get the Lexapro, you know, SSRIs. But this is just the thing that for so many women, sometimes you could play with them a little and just, I don't know. I would go back and talk to your doctor who prescribed them, your psychiatrist, and just see if you could lower the dose just a little bit. Sometimes you can do it on the weekends. I don't know about Lexapro. So that's one thing. But the other thing is what I think is it's such a good opportunity right now to really have a conversation with your husband about your sex life. Like, what could we do? Because what most couples crave, whether they're making a baby or they've been together 10 years, is their sex life gets boring and a little bit dull. And what brings that spark back, whether or not you're looking to have a baby or not, is actually communication is a lubrication. Like talking about sex and then figuring out some fun new things you guys could do together, whether it's toys or lubes or, you know, role playing or like having a date for sex, getting a hotel room when you know you're ovulating and getting your, you know, getting out of your head about it and making it interesting for both of you so you're craving the sex again. And especially if you're having low libido right now, it could be fun like just to kind of add in some additional things that are novel. You could start by taking our yes, no, maybe list, which is on our website, also at sexwithemily.com. And this list is something you could just like, you guys could take it together and it's like kiss, you know, do we like deep kissing? Yes, no, maybe. Spanking? Yes, no, maybe. Dirty talk? And it could just start a conversation with you and your husband about some things you want to try that are a little bit different. Okay. And maybe if you've never had these conversations, I think it'll be really helpful for you to be like, oh, well, let's try that one night. And I think maybe going to a sex toy store one night and getting some lubes or toys, especially if orgasm is a problem for you right now, I would say, like, do not hesitate to get a toy. We love the Jeju Mimi is one of our favorites to use during intercourse, mm-hmm. and it's killer orgasms. And listen to the podcast together. I don't know how much time you guys have together, but a lot of couples have kind of helped. It's to help start the conversation. I could go on and on, Becky, but does any of that resonate with you or help you out to start with?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We've spoken about it before for sure. And we actually did go to a sex shop and we bought some things, but they were so out of our comfort zone that we just never used them.
Right. That happens. Like you like jump the gun. You're like, this will be fun. You're like, what do we do with this? You know, I think
very businesslike about it too. We started researching there was a whip with the tales and we went on Google, but it didn't get us excited at all. We were sort of just like in this mode of how do we use it? And then it never got used.
Right. Well, that's what happens sometimes. People like jump the gun and they're like, oh, this toy seems really hard or this whole elaborate thing. Maybe you just want more clitoral stimulation. Maybe you guys want to talk dirty or role play. Or honestly, my podcast, I've been doing it for like 14 years. You guys could binge on some episodes that sound interesting to you. And it just, I think you'll get a lot of ideas from that too. Okay, let's talk to Mark, 45, in Connecticut. Hey, Mark, how can I help?
Hi, Dr. Emily. So nice to talk to you live.
Nice to talk to you, too.
I am, thank you. I'm coming off a divorce, long-term divorce or long-term marriage with a very poor sex life when it existed.
Okay.
And about 6 months through this separation period, a coworker kind of took me in, you know, helped me find a place. And after about 3-4 months of being there, the relationship developed. Absolutely love the woman. Sex life is great. Everything about it is perfect. However, to be honest, there's been a lot of women that have come out of the woodworks and become available. And there's this overwhelming feeling of like wanting to date other people or have, I guess, maybe just have sex with other people and experience that after having gone through such a long drought.
Yeah.
And I'm in this like crossroads of, am I getting into a immediately too committed of a relationship too soon and not, you know,
sounds like you, yeah. Well, Mark, that sounds like exactly what's happening. So you were married for a long time. How long were you married?
18 years.
18 years. And then you're just going through the divorce right now.
It just finished, just finalized.
Okay. So it's, and now you're saying you've been dating someone for like a few months and she wants to kind of make it, you know, official. Kind of thing.
Yeah, make it
boyfriend,
a
girlfriend,
time, and
commit.
I do care for her.
I know you do. So here's what I think, Mark. I think you got to honor this. I think you're absolutely right. For 18 years having a sexless marriage, and now you're dating, and you're tasting all the flavors that are out there. You've only been having chocolate, right? And so I think that this is kind of a process that a lot of people have to go through. So for you, it's like, yeah, maybe you are, you know, you would like to go out there and experiment otherwise. So I think what I would recommend that you do, Mark, is be really honest with this woman, because I believe that, now listen, I know I live in California, you live in Connecticut, like things are different in different parts of the world, different parts of the country. But I'm also going to say that to be honest and to be like, you know what, I love your relationship and what we're having and all the things you like about it, but I can't help feel that I really need some time with myself. I need to go out and experience other people, other things, and maybe there's a way she would still be okay being with you. Well, you do that, or maybe okay. She won't. But I feel like when people say it in a way that's, you know, let's try something that's, you know, alternative, like an alternative relationship style where it's non-monogamous or it's, you know, it really can work. So I think that we're so black and white thinking, like either we're committed or we're not. But I think there is this in-between area that I've seen a lot of people, and I know, and I advise people, and they've successfully been able to navigate it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So I would recommend that, because I think if you stay in the relationship and you don't get these needs met, that'll be equally frustrating. So I think being honest about it and going slow with the conversation and just kind of, you know, making sure you're careful in your words, because, you know, if you're like, I just want to bang a bunch of chicks, like that's what she's going to hear anyway. So
right.
Saying like, this is just soon for me and I really even appreciate this, but I can't help this feeling. And I could tell you when I'm going on dates, or we could, you know, figure out what, and she might be like, no way, I can never handle that. And then I feel like you can listen around. Tell me more about that. What would it be like? Like, what would you need from me for it to feel okay? I just think, yeah, that's a conversation you have to have. And I don't think that people are having that conversation enough, because I think that a lot of relationships can work out, but we just don't give it the chance. And if it doesn't, you know, yeah, then you have to decide.
I think you're right.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks, Mark. Good. Thanks for calling. Have a good night. As always, you guys, rate us wherever you're listening right now. Just look down on your phone, like your whatever app you're listening on. Give us 5 stars. We love that. Comment on iTunes. Super helpful. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks to my awesome team, Ken, Kristen, Elisa, Brian, our interns, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.